brighter version of herself. The success she always wanted, the acclaim, the husband. Even after everything, I wished her happiness, always. To know that she hadn't found it stirred something cold and unfamiliar inside me. "But you'd know about that, wouldn't you?" Dottie said. "I don't think she ever got to tell you how sorry she was, how much she regretted the choices she made." She watched my face closely. "Do you ever think about her?" After the breakup, I thought about her constantly, until my brain hurt and my heart throbbed. I'd cry at couples holding hands on the television. I'd stare at her side of the bed and pretend she was there, that I hadn't destroyed the best thing that had ever happened to me. Seasons changed and I picked myself up again. I stopped being such an emotional wreck, eventually. But one thing never changed. Grace continued to occupy my waking thoughts. I'd see her in the line at the bank. She'd be two seats away at dinner, the other end of the train carriage. It was never her, but she was always there. Forever a part of me. I figured that it would be highly unprofessional of me to say, so instead I said, "Sometimes." I looked at Dottie. She knew I was understating it. She could see how the mention of Grace's name made me feel like I was inside out. "She never got over you." Dottie's voice softened with sympathy. "Pretend she did, though. Very convincing. To some." It all started to feel too real. Too much. After I took Dottie's temperature, I hung her notes at the end of the bed. I closed her curtain. I showed her which button to press if she needed anything. "I wish she'd forgiven you," Dottie said. I stopped in my tracks. I wasn't prepared for the raw, burning emotion those words would bring up. I walked to the door and stopped. "Some things are unforgivable," I said. Dottie was on my ward for another week. She was supposed to be discharged after a few days, but her temperature spiked. Her cardiac catheter incision became inflamed. She was reacting well to the antibiotics, but in no fit state to be sent home yet. I picked up extra shifts to make sure she was being well cared for, which was entirely self-serving because, of course, I'd walk by her room during visiting hours in the hope of seeing a particular curly-haired woman. "Nurse Henry," Dottie called as I walked past her room one night shift. I put the patient gown I was carrying to one side, sanitized my hands and entered. "I know everyone is so busy and I don't like to be a fuss." "You're in pain," I assumed, grabbing her chart. She'd had pain relief not 2 hours earlier. "No, I hear. My television isn't working." She said it as if she were terribly embarrassed. I couldn't recall it being on since she'd been admitted. And I am now so far behind on my ghost hunting shows, I'll never catch up. I frowned at the bulky plastic television that hung over her bed. I checked my watch. "They usually need the settings changed. Let me take a look quickly. If I can't fix it in the next 2 minutes, I'll call the tech team for you." "Thank you." I crouched beside her, pressing the little buttons on the side. The screen froze on blue, lighting the whole room. "No visitors today?" I asked, glancing at the forever empty bedside chair. Dottie chuckled to herself. "I'm told my loving daughter is on a business trip. Europe. She'll get here when she gets here." "Grace would be here in a heartbeat," I said. "She does too much for me as it is. I'm being well looked after. I'll see her when I get home in a couple of days." It didn't feel right. Grace should be here. She'd want to know that something was wrong, but it wasn't my place The television loaded the default hospital information screen and it occurred to me what she had said. Did you say you want to watch a ghost show? Oh, yes, very important. They hunt down ghosts, causing havoc, and help them resolve their past traumas and move through to the afterlife. So it's scripted. Made up. She was appalled at my assumption. Oh, it is very real. I smiled, remembering her bungalow lined with crystals, the Ouija board I'd crawled into her loft for. It felt like a lifetime ago. I showed Dottie how to change the channel. A television presenter yelled into darkness. I didn't have time, but I watched it for a second. They've all got unfinished business, Dottie said. But they never do anything about it, do they? They float around, scaring the life out of people. What they need is a plan. Ghosts with agendas, whatever next. She laughed, then coughed. I held her sick bowl to her chin until she pushed it away. I'm convinced there's a way for the spirits to come back somehow. The more Dottie talked, the brighter she looked, so I indulged her. Like reincarnation? No, that exists already. I mean like time travel. Coming back to a certain moment and getting to do it all over again. Correct your mistakes. Finish what you need to. I flicked the page over on her chart to check her meds. I'm going to let Dr. Pennelly know your meds are causing a few cognitive side effects. I am lucid, she barked with a smile. Goodness, you knock on the door of 80 and everyone thinks you've lost your marbles. I know exactly where they are. I raised an eyebrow. And what would you do if you came back at another point in your life? I'm a proud woman, Henry. I remembered my manners. Sorry, that was overstepping. She tutted. Let me finish. I kept quiet. Dottie was still the one in control, and didn't she let me know it? I am a proud woman. I did all the things I was told I should. I met a nice man, started a family. I ticked off my list because those were the things I was taught to do. I had some wonderful years with my Benedict, but after he passed, I realised there was so much more love in my heart. Love I was never allowed to act upon. I always thought I was doing the right thing, keeping that part of myself hidden away, denied. But now that I'm lying here and getting up to use the bathroom feels like climbing a mountain, it all seems so wasted. I wanted to get to the end and feel ready. But instead, I feel incomplete. Unfinished business, I said. Exactly. Who would have thought I'd relate to all those ghosts after all? Dottie smiled as if she were lost in a memory. Then she slipped back to reality with a stern warning. So don't end up an old spinster like me who didn't know when to put her pride aside and pick up the bloody phone. She stared into my eyes, making sure I understood her fully. I did. But I still didn't do anything about it. It was the day before Grace's 30th birthday. I'd realised that morning. I didn't have it marked on a calendar. It was imprinted on my brain. Never forgotten. But this year, instead of wondering what she was doing, if she was happier now, all I could think was, she should be here. Where's Monroe, room 4? I asked when I arrived on shift after 3 days off to find a cleaner mopping the floor of Dottie's room. The charge nurse didn't look up from the blood sample she was labelling. Palliative. Palliative, I repeated. If I hadn't skipped breakfast, I swear I'd have seen it again. She was doing well last time I clocked off, responding to treatment. What the hell happened? Moved yesterday after a second arrest. Wasn't good, she replied. She wasn't a candidate for intervention, I asked. The charge nurse shrugged, too busy to give this any time. Reynolds made the call. Take it up with her, she said before disappearing into a patient room. I backed against a wall, the whole ward moving in slow motion around me. This was it. There was nothing more that could be done. Dottie was going to die. I spent the rest of my shift in zombie mode. I'd called the palliative ward. Dottie was stable and conscious. For now. But I needed to talk to her. Needed to check for myself. Needed to make sure Grace was aware before it was too late. By the time my shift ended and I made it down to palliative care, the sun was a glorious shade of gold at Dottie's bedroom window. Deep, grey rain clouds looming in the distance. She looked so peaceful, but the nurse's station had warned me it wouldn't be long. Ruth, her daughter, was flying back from Germany today. She'd be here any minute. They hadn't been instructed to notify anyone else. I closed my eyes as I let the reality of that sink in. How much it would destroy Grace. I crouched at Dottie's bedside. She pulled back her oxygen mask enough to whisper, I thought you'd forgotten about me. I touched her hand. It was ice cold. Dottie, I said, Grace needs to be here. She nodded, just enough to be noticeable. They've called Ruth, but Grace, I don't have my phone book. Her eyes were filled with panic. Her breathing became laboured. She'll be at the restaurant. I don't know how. She snapped her mask back to her face, fighting for air. I understood perfectly. I'll take care of it, I said. She closed her eyes in relief, then opened them as I pulled my phone from my backpack to call the restaurant. The look she gave me could still raging rivers. Please go to her. She'll panic. She'll rush. She's not good under pressure. Dottie, I said doubtfully, thumb hovering over the phone. She'll need you, she said. She's always needed you. The only thing Grace needed from me was distance. But this was so much bigger than our history. I couldn't refuse this poor woman's dying wishes, and I couldn't live with myself if I was the reason Grace didn't get to say goodbye. I'll get her here, I said. I promise. I stood. I checked my watch as my brain rushed through train times to Winley. If I hurried, I could be there in 20 minutes. I felt anxiety surge. Shit, this wasn't happening. Can you? Dottie nodded to the television. Of course. She winced in pain as I propped up her pillows. I put on her ghost show. 5 years ago, I lost everything, she said. I lost Althea, my best friend. The love of my life. Dottie, I said. She was sharing her regrets, I realised. Her unfinished business. She shouldn't have to do this with me. Ruth will be here soon, I said. And Grace. She shook her head. You don't understand. 5 years ago, everything went wrong. For all of us. I looked at the door. I had to get Grace here before Dottie lost lucidity. She grabbed my hand tight as she could, as light as a child. I have a plan. Once I reach the other side, she said. I gave her a puzzled look. I'm coming back 5 years ago to make things right, and I'm bringing you with me. The dying often became a little delirious, but I wasn't willing to burst her bubble. I forced a smile, squeezed her hand, and said, "See you then, Dottie." It was the last time I ever spoke to her. Until now. It's been nearly a year since I saw Grace on that escalator. Since I was silenced from the shock of having her right there in front of me after all that time. Since I reached the top of the stairs and snapped back to sense. Since I chased her through the station only to watch her train pull away. A crumbled red velvet cake, the only proof she was ever there. Nearly a year too since I woke up the next morning to find my beard missing, my patience vanished, my sanity questioned. Since I realised Dottie had achieved the impossible and given me the second chance I'd always longed for. Now, it's almost midnight in December, and I'm standing outside a white bungalow with blue windows. It's exactly how I remember it. When I ring the bell, I see a shadow on the other side, between the movement of a beaded curtain. The lock turns. The door opens. And there stands a woman in her 70s. The same woman whose deathbed I sat next to not so long ago. Dottie. She smiles, as if she spent an entire year waiting for me to come knocking. "You did this to me," I say. "You told me you'd bring me back to this point so I could fix things, and I don't know how, but here I am with this incredible gift, and I'm screwing it up all over again." Dottie steps out of the bungalow, pulling the front door to. I almost tell her to get inside, that it's too cold, but right now she looks like she can cope fine. "Althea is inside," she whispers. "She already thinks I'm losing the plot. Let's not fuel that fire." She doesn't ask me what I'm doing here. I'm wearing shorts and flip-flops in the middle of winter. I've got bed hair, a wrecked expression. It'd be clear to anyone I need help. "Grace thinks she caused this with some crystals and wine," she says, when I don't look shocked at this revelation. Dottie laughs. "How long did it take you to figure out I dragged her back here too?" I groan. "A while." She came to me in disbelief that this had happened. I didn't have the heart to tell her the truth. That I spent my whole life looking for magic only to find it in death. Dottie died that night. The realization sweeps through me. I reach out to comfort her, touching her arm, but she bats me away. "Don't get soppy on me, I'm fine." She straightens, showing her fighting spirit like it never left. "Grace remembers everything," I say. "I've tried so hard, but she can't trust me." I close my eyes and see Grace telling me it might be over. That she's leaving for New York and wants to hit pause on our relationship. I can't blame her. After everything we've been through, I'd have my doubts too. Grace believes I'm the same man who broke her heart. And I am, on a technical level. But I'm different. I spent the last 12 months in therapy stripping myself bare with a guy called Ronald, who's made me question every coping mechanism I've come to rely on. He's taught me how to accept my past, deal with disappointment, with heartbreak. I stopped drinking again, stopped searching for that off switch. I've grown up more since Dottie threw me back here than I have my whole life. I faced my demons, reconnected with my brothers. I've been open and honest, shining a light on all the shadowed parts of myself I couldn't stand anyone to see. And I've fallen hopelessly, unbearably more in love with Grace Monroe, a woman who ruined me in so many ways but has proved to me time and time again that she's not the same. She's put everyone above herself. She's helped Sasha make her dreams come true, been a rock for Ali, She's worked tirelessly to find me the home of my dreams, and now that she's got this incredible opportunity to shine in the way she deserves, she's waiting for the other shoe to drop. For me to hurt her again, because that's what history has taught her to expect. What I taught her to expect. But now it's my turn to prove to her that I'm not the same, that I won't hurt her, that I never will. I just don't know how. Please, Dottie, please tell me how to fix this. I'm practically begging. But you and Grace have the same issue. It really is straightforward, Dottie says, smiling through her obvious frustration that I should have this figured out by now. She waits until I'm looking her in the eye before saying, "You're both so desperate to forget, when what you really need to do is forgive."
Chapter 28. Grace. Now. Henry's home feels like Ali's. She's only been living back here for a couple of weeks since she broke up with Marcus, and half the house is boxed up ready for Henry's move, yet the rooms smell of her sweet perfume. Her soft throws and cushions line the sofa. Nothing about it feels temporary. I come to my senses a little as I take a seat. This woman, who I barely knew before, is now one of my closest friends, and she's wide awake in the middle of the night, eating junk food, watching Christmas rom-coms. Clearly, I'm not the only one going through it. "How are you?" I ask. "Have you heard from Marcus?" "Excuse me," she gasps. "We are not sidestepping your dramatic arrival to then sit here and talk about that arsehole." She flops down next to me. "Not that I'm not happy to see you, babe, but seriously, what the hell?" I don't take my eyes from my feet. "Have you ever loved someone so much that even the thought of losing them drove you to madness?"
Hello?
"Yeah," she says. "So you think, what, that I'm in love with Henry? That we're having some secret affair?" Her voice is speculative, but it still makes my stomach feel like it's been dunked into acid. I believed that they were together the first time around. I couldn't conceive that they'd randomly fallen all over each other the minute Henry and I hit the rocks. It didn't feel plausible. This time, though, I hope and hope and hope that I was wrong. I'm insecure. You know this already. And getting ready to leave the country has amplified all my worries. I need to know. I'll be honest with you, because you're my friend. And I care. But if you speak a word of this to Henry... Ali pauses, eyes wide and serious. I nod. I did have a crush on him. One of those teenage, "I'm going to die if he doesn't reply to my message today" kind of crushes. Oh God. I'm standing in the way of some sort of epic childhood romance. A love story that spans a lifetime. I'm a soon-to-be-forgotten background character in their lives. I think I'm going to cry. But, Ali says, putting a reassuring hand on my knee, I grew out of it. I was 13 and I fancied every guy that looked at me. Henry was this mysterious boy online who had been through almost exactly what I had. I guess we trauma bonded, as my therapist would say. I finally met him in person when I was about 18. He had been sleeping rough, living the worst few weeks of his life. He'd been in a fight, beaten up for asking the wrong guy for change. Had a black eye, a bruised rib, a total state. I paid for him to get the train to Newcastle with my waitressing money. We cried, we complained, cursed the world. And then we got very, very drunk. I see them grinding in a club, falling into bed together. Now I'm definitely going to cry. She must see where my mind goes because she talks faster. Nothing happened. It wasn't how you picture it. It wasn't some drink-fueled weekend like normal kids do that age. It was like dusting each other off. Reintroducing us to the world we wanted to live in, not the one we'd been raised in. We had it tough, him and me. That's why we became so close. He always tells me I'm like his little sister, and I say he's like my little brother. It's just that, an unofficial family. So, you two haven't... No! God, no, never even kissed. Never even thought about it. Which is a surprise for me, because I have a long history of making rash decisions about men that put me in a lot of trouble. Ali sighs, pulling a tissue from the box on the coffee table and handing it to me. So you don't think, in another circumstance, you and he could be together? Honestly, she says. I brace myself. Henry and I pull the darkness out of each other, and not in a good way. No matter what we do, when we're together, we always end up picking at our old wounds. We offload and moan. We tell each other the shitty thoughts we have in the middle of the night that we think no one else will understand. Our friendship is amazing. He's like my support system. But being with him? No. She shakes her head. There's no overacting, no dramatics, only a silent, resolved headshake. It's not what either of us wants or needs. We'd live in the past, make each other miserable. Hell no to that. Ali wraps her arm around my shoulder and pulls me towards her. Look, I don't know what's happened between you, and I know it must be weird with me being back in his house and you literally flying across the world, leaving him behind. But Grace, she looks me in the eye, nothing romantic will ever happen between me and Henry, and I would never do anything to ruin our friendship. You mean way too much to me. I'm sobbing into Ali's hair, because I believe her, because I feel the same. Because I almost lived my whole life oblivious to how much I needed a friend like her. I think I might have messed things up, I say. I told him I love him. He said nothing back. Ali pauses. I feel her spine stiffen in surprise. He loves you. You know he does. But it's hard for him. He's always been weird about those words. They were the last thing he said to his parents before he was bundled into the back of a social worker's car and his entire world was turned upside down. My heart throbs for these details. The painful parts of him I am so desperate to understand. I wish I knew him the way you know him. You will, Ali nods with certainty. You will know him better than I ever could. Because Jesus, if you two can't make it work, then there's literally not a hope in hell for the rest of us. I laugh, wiping my face. I notice the screen paused on a picture of Jude Law and Cameron Diaz. I love this film, I say. I know, that's why I put it on, because I was missing you already. She nudges me playfully. It's better than I thought it would be. I take a deep breath. My brain is crackling with thoughts of all the things I need to be doing. I need to find Henry. I need to get some sleep before my flight tomorrow. I need to... Do you want to stay and watch for a minute? Until you're feeling better? Ali asks. I can think of nothing I need more than to stay in this warm, calm spot. The place where my heart broke all those years ago. And sit with one of my best friends. Someone who sees me at my worst. When I've stopped pretending everything is fine. And still loves me. Yeah, I say. I do. Henry doesn't show up at his house, and when the film ends, Ali orders me a taxi home. I've called him, but it rings endlessly. I've no idea where he could be. If there's any chance we can fix this before I leave for the airport in a few hours, if he'll ever want to speak to me again after what I said. The taxi stops at the end of my road, and I take the last few steps to my house. The cars are covered in a thick layer of ice. My breath spirals around me. I stop in my tracks when I turn onto my drive and see Henry sitting on the doorstep. He's still in his shorts and coat. He's shivering. Henry, you'll freeze out here. What are you... He pulls me into his arms before I can finish. My face collides with his chest. He kisses my head. Thank God you're still here. I was terrified you'd already left for the airport. I wouldn't go without saying goodbye, I say, realizing that given the way I'd left things, I could hardly expect him to know that. I open his coat and bundle myself inside, warming him, breathing in his skin. Where have you been? I tried calling. My phone is in your bedroom. I went to see the one person who understood what I was going through, who would know how to fix this. I can't lose you, Grace. I can't do this again. I know, I say. I'm so sorry. In a moment of insanity, I almost tell him the truth. I almost spill it all out. How I've lived this day before. How I know the next two prime ministers. Who will win the next World Cup. But then I pause. It's madness. And it's not like he'd believe me anyway. I had this dream, I say. This horrible, incomprehensible nightmare. We were younger, but the same age, actually. And I know that makes no sense, but I did something bad to you. And even worse, I lied about it. I knew it was a mistake, but I was so scared of losing everything I'd worked for, of being a failure, that I buried my head in the sand. I hoped it would be okay, and then it wasn't. A dream, Henry says. I feel his hands tremble against my back, as palpable as the nerves in his voice. We had a big fight. I ruined your chance to own your own house. All those times you'd had your safe space ripped from you, and now I was the one taking it away. Me. You wouldn't do that, he says, with unwavering certainty. I did, I say, and you hated me for it. I never. Henry wipes a tear from my cheek with his thumb, pausing as if confused as to why this is hurting me so much. It took me a couple of hours to come to my senses, to find you and fix it. I let myself into your house. I had my apology ready to go. I was going to make it right somehow. Get a loan, I don't know, contact the mafia. Whatever I needed to do so that you still got your home. And when I walked in, you were on the sofa, with Ali, and... Henry's hands tighten on my hips. He sucks in a breath. And I was kissing her, he says, as if it's as real to him as it is me. I nod. I thought you were in love with her, that you always had been, and that I hadn't opened my eyes and seen it. And even when I came around to reality, the here and now, it was all I could see, all I could think about. Her on top of you, kissing, touching. You were looking at each other like it was the most natural thing in the world. Henry pulls me into his chest again. We're both shaking, cold and frightened. I look up at him. It hurt so badly I wanted to die. Henry kisses my forehead as he holds me. I know it's messed with my mind, I say, that I'm blaming you for something you haven't done. But it was so real. And then Ali and Marcus split up and... It wasn't a dream, Grace. I suck in a breath. It catches in the back of my throat, lodged like a cotton ball. We both know it wasn't, he says. His gaze fixes on mine, eyes full of fear and love and guilt. This can't be real. He can't possibly mean what I think he does. Henry, I say, face twisting in disbelief. It's a miracle that I'm back here. A strange wish come true. There's no way it happened to him too. Is there? I saw you the night before your 30th birthday, he says. You were on an escalator at the train station, a cake box in your hands. You were crying. I step away so fast my ankle bangs into a plant pot. I don't register the shooting pain. I was coming to find you. I had to tell you. But when I saw you for the first time in years, saw how upset you were, I was speechless. I got to the top of the escalator and turned back. But by the time I reached the platform, you were already gone. Your cake smashed on the floor. That was you. You. Now. Here. He nods slowly, as though he's letting me in on his biggest secret. The last thing I remember is you calling me, I say. He smiles. It took me hours to track down your new number. The phone was ringing, and then everything became a blur. I thought I'd passed out, that I'd hit my head as I fell. But then you woke up 5 years earlier. Henry laughs like it's the most absurd thing he's ever heard. Grace, I woke up with a 6-week beard shaved off my face. I thought I'd done it in my sleep. Then I turned up to my shift and my patients had all vanished. I thought I'd lost my mind. I asked a doctor to refer me for a brain scan. I went home sick, trying to make sense of it all, only to have my house bombarded with drunk lawyers and a short blonde caterer, the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Again. The air I breathe fails to reach my lungs. This whole time, I say. All I can think is that he knows. He knows what I did. The apology that's been eating my inside flies out of me. Your money. I'm so sorry. I thought it was just money. That so long as I paid it back, eventually it would be okay. I should have known how important it was to you. I should never have been so selfish. I grab his hand, making sure he feels how much I mean this. I did everything I could to make sure you had it back as fast as possible. He nods. I know. It's okay. Truly. I knew very quickly that you weren't going to make that mistake again. There's a half smile on his lips. How long has he known I'd glitched too? Why didn't you say something? I say. Because you looked at me like our worst moments never happened. And I can't tell you how badly I wanted to keep it that way. I spent 4 years wishing I could erase it, that I could have a clean slate. And then when I finally got one, I couldn't let it go. When did you realize I'd... At the races. You were a little different at the house party, but I thought maybe I was remembering things wrong. I'd already changed my entire day. I thought there was some weird butterfly effect going on, like I had a chance in hell of making sense of it. We got together so fast. Fell for each other so easily the first time around. I thought I must have underestimated how hard we had to work in those early days to build what we had. Then, outside the hotel, you said what you did about not wanting to start a restaurant. But I didn't quite believe it until that bet of yours. The lucky one. I knew it the minute you chose it. I swear to God, when you started talking about moving to Sydney, I thought I was going to lose my damn mind. And then you started seeing Reese. I was trying to convince myself I didn't want you. I didn't think I could do it again, I say apologetically. This, the end. I thought we were doomed. I did the same with Felicity, he says. I thought I could forget how I felt about you. Forget, I say. It's what I've been grappling with for months. Why we're both holding on to a past we can't let go of. Henry nods for me to carry on, paving the way for a conversation we should have had 4 years ago, one I wasn't ready for then, that I barely am now. How could you do that with Ali? I say. I don't recognize the sound of my voice for all the pain and strife filtering through it. I know I was awful. I know I didn't deserve your forgiveness. But did I not deserve better than that? Shame and regret seeps across his face. He hangs his head low. Or did you just get over me that fast? Never, Henry says, vehement. His eyes clamp on mine. I never got over you. Never. He steps closer to me again. His cold hand cups my cheek. Back then, I was angry and hurting and so fucking immature still. I had no idea how to handle it. What you did. It was a perfect storm. Ali was upset over Marcus, and I dealt with the hurt the only way I knew how, by drinking until I couldn't feel it anymore. It doesn't change anything, but it needs saying. She kissed me, Grace. And I was so upset with you. I didn't know if we were together or over, and for that split second, I lost my mind. I switched off my brain and heart the way I always did. One snap decision. I made a mistake that cost me you. He puts his forehead against mine, closing his eyes as thick tears roll over his cheeks. His breath is long and deep. A shudder. I messed up so badly, Grace. I'm so, so sorry. I swear to you, that was all it was. All it ever was. Two broken people imploding. We never... It was a drunken fumble, and even if you hadn't walked in, I swear it wouldn't have gone further. There are no complicated feelings, no sordid affair, no missing piece you're not aware of. I've spent the last 5 years regretting it, spent every second since I woke up here trying to prove to you that I'm different, that I'll never, ever hurt you again. I thought you and Ali were going to end up together. That's why I cut you out of my life. I couldn't bear to see it. His frustrated sigh trails across the black night. After Ali and I, it was so awkward. She felt unbearably guilty. I was in the worst state of my life, and that's saying something. She moved out. We spoke intermittently, but it wasn't the same. She got married. I was happy for her. But keeping her in my life was one big painful reminder of how badly I destroyed you. Us. Me. I gripped the lapels of his coat, holding on for dear life. I thought you loved her. This whole time I've been waiting for you to wake up and realize it. To leave me. I love you. The words burst out of him. I love you, Grace. The only person I ever have. I wish I'd been able to put the shit in my head aside sooner, that I told you the first moment I knew. That first night in my kitchen, and every moment after. Because there hasn't been a minute since that I've not been desperately, heartbrokenly, in love with you, Grace. You're it for me. I knew it then, and by some insanity, I know it even more now. My chest lights up like a lantern. The warmth of a roaring fire. That's the first time you've ever said that. I know. Say it again. He laughs, and I close my eyes, braced to take it in fully this time. He slides his fingertips into my curls, sending sparks down my spine as his nose brushes mine. I open my eyes, and I'm consumed in green. For once, not the jealous shade, but the glowing embers of Henry's eyes. I love you, Grace, he whispers. So much I can hardly stand it. I laugh as tears reach my nose. You should have said it earlier when I told you and you just rolled over. Wait, what? I told you I love you. Earlier tonight in bed. He closes his eyes, scrunches his eyebrows. You did? I was half asleep. I didn't. He pauses. Is that why you were so upset? I nod. God, I had no idea. I was out for the count. Henry pulls me to his chest, and I feel his racing heart on my cheek. There's been so much I've wanted to change this time around. About me, about us. I never said those words before because I've always been too afraid of what it might mean I stand to lose. The houses I grew up in, love wasn't a gift. It was a weapon. Love meant pain and loss and sadness. And I thought if I said those words, then... He scrunches his nose, silencing himself. I've been seeing my therapist twice a week. I want to stop running from the past I can't change. I wanted to be perfect for you the first time around. And this time... I wanted to be the best version of myself and hope to hell you'd love me anyway. That you could forgive me the way I've forgiven you. I do love you. Before the last syllable has left my mouth, his lips are on me, pulling me in, drawing out every last scrap of emotion inside me. His lips are cold, his heart warm, and I'm falling all over again. I never stopped, I realize. And I forgive you, I say. I want to trust you. I want to move forward. I don't want our mistakes to...
He kisses me again, and I realise how none of it matters. How what happened before is history. It belongs in the back of a book, buried in an attic, never to be read again. I love you. Always.
We're going to get it right this time, he says.
Hamlet and Jumbolia. You and me. I'm laughing. I can't believe, after everything, I'm laughing.
New York isn't ready for us, he says.
Us? I hiss. Us?
The word is all breath. I still feel it throbbing in my chest seconds after it's left me.
I was waiting until I knew for sure to tell you, but I've already started the application. I'm taking a licensing test in January. I'm looking for nursing jobs.
I'm coming with you, Grace, he smiles.
If you want me to, that is.
Of course I want you to. But your house, it's your dream. I can't be the reason you lose out. I won't do that again.
He shrugs, like, no big deal. It's done. I've already pulled out. Someone else has offered.
Henry, I cry. Why would you do that?
Because if there's one thing my life has taught me, it's that home has nothing to do with the roof above your head. It's where you feel safe, wanted, needed. You are home, Grace. I've never had someone in my life before who makes me feel like I'm so completely where I'm supposed to be.
It's like
peace.
I've never felt that before.
And I'll have it, wherever I am, so long as you're there. I open my mouth in bewilderment. Joyful surprise that after all this, we've ended up here, where our biggest mistakes, the dreams we put between us, are now insignificant cracks in the road that led us here. How did the estate agent take that news?
Not great. I told them I'd invested in some restaurant and lost half my deposit.
I gasp in horror, and Henry smiles as he kisses me.
Come on, it's been 5 years.
I'm ready to joke about it. You must be too. I might need a little longer, I say.
Younger us,
he tuts, shaking his head in dismay. Such idiots, I say. Can think of stronger words. He kisses me again, as if the brief seconds away from my mouth have half killed him. We can do this, though. You and me. The people we are now. We deserve this.
There are a million what-ifs on the end of my tongue. What if we hit a rough patch? What if he despises New York? What if I wake up back on my kitchen floor and none of it really happened? And then I realize the what-ifs are always going to be there. I can never know for sure. I knew 5 years into the future and still everything changed. The only thing I can control is the here and now. How I feel. What I do.
We do deserve this, I say. My fingers curl against him as I bring my mouth in for another long kiss. So let's go to New York and start a brand new life together, he says. You can become the chef you've always dreamed of being. I'll keep working, learning, keeping those hearts beating. If there's one thing we know after this year, it's that anything can happen. This is our chance to rewrite history. Me and you, together, come what may. I smile against his lips. Come what may.
Epilogue. Grace. 4 years later, Grace's 30th birthday. The second time.
Two slabs of sponge cake are placed on the table in front of me. One in the shape of a 3, the other a 0. I swipe my hand through the white icing and suck my finger. My birthday cake is once again red velvet, but there's not a train station in sight, and the man I saw the first time round isn't staring at me, slack-jawed, with heartbreak in his green eyes. No, he's holding my hand, burying his mouth against my neck. Everything has changed. He does have a beard again, though, A damn sexy one at that.
Make a wish, Gracie,
says Sasha and Roman's daughter, Pearl, as she climbs into my lap. She's not being cute, although she is, in her yellow dinosaur onesie, her hair pulled into space buns. She's trying to hurry me along. Pearl has been eyeing up these cakes since we arrived at my restaurant 2 hours ago. Yep, my restaurant. Well, technically, it's a franchise of Celine's incredibly successful New York restaurant, but in Winchester, halfway between the Ivy and Rick Stein's place. But it's my name on the letterhead. My neck on the line if anything goes wrong. Not that it will. I have the best in the business behind me, raising me up, supporting me. And I have Rhonda and Patrick and Annika. When Celine asked me who I wanted working with me here, I didn't hesitate. My dream team from The Lucky One. I promised I'd make it up to them. And if they don't realize it, I stay true to that.
Aren't New Yorkers supposed to be rushing all the time?
Ali says, letting go of her husband Mikhail's hand to pinch a strawberry from beside one of the cakes. I'm thinking, I reply, smiling at her. I want to be sure I make a good wish. New York was a whirlwind. The movies did it justice, that's for sure. Everything felt bigger, and not only because it was a supersized city, but because Henry was beside me, every day, amplifying my entire life, elevating every joyous emotion. He took a job providing outpatient care across the city. The pay was terrible, but it turns out I wasn't the only one to make a sneaky bet on the luckiest horse in history. He'd only placed a modest bet, but his winnings gave us enough security to enjoy ourselves. And through his job, he got to see every corner of New York City, learned all the best pizza places, which subway trains had the best entertainers, started ordering his morning bagels with a smear of cream cheese. I kept up my social pages, not because I needed to, but because I wanted to. The vegetable girl takes Manhattan. Although Henry loves to remind me that my most viewed video is the one with his cameo, a gorgeous, dark-haired nurse eating my cooking and looking at me as though his whole world has clicked into place. It's my favourite too. It wasn't always easy. We worked hard at both our careers and our relationship. But we trust each other, fully, completely. We talk about everything, no matter how frivolous it feels. Every day, I know him better than the one before. So well, in fact, that in the end, neither of us needed to say it. After 3.5 amazing years, it was time to come home. The heat of the birthday candles warm my face as they flicker higher, the smoke thickening.
Come on, Grace, Dottie says. You'll be 40 by the time you blow them out.
Her wife, Althea, nudges her playfully, and Dottie kisses her cheek. There's a present in her lap, but she's already given me the best gift of my life. More time with her. A chance not to erase mistakes, but to learn from them. She did eventually confess the truth about her involvement in my glitch. How she'd slipped away peacefully and discovered magic on the other side.
The combination of a blood moon, a lost soul, and the power of unfinished business, she'd said.
Henry wanted to tell me, but she'd begged him not to. Said she would tell me when she was ready. And she was ready the next Christmas, when the four of us ice skated in Central Park, a tick off Dottie's never-ending bucket list. She was vague about the details, explaining that the last thing she remembers from before was being in a hospital bed with my mum beside her, and the next thing she knew she was waking up in her bungalow, feeling ready to change the world. We don't know for sure how long she'll have left with us, how much time we have until her heart gives out. But whatever the answer, it won't be tonight. She's eating well, taking her medication, keeping active. Dottie's heart might be sick, but it's full and happy. She's got more days left to live, more memories to make. I finally blow out the candles to rapturous applause. Before, I would have wished for success. For the respect and pride of my parents. For all the things that felt so out of reach. But now, my wish is simple. More. More love. More laughter. More time. More of the same. Music begins to play, and Sasha cuts the cake for everyone. She hands me a plate, and without word I feel how proud she is of me, how happy she is to have me home. I know because I feel the same. It's been the biggest challenge, juggling motherhood and a new law firm, for she's done it like a rock star. I might not know what's next for her, but I know for sure this is just the beginning. I eat my slice as I circle the party, chatting to Henry's brothers and their partners, to my parents, who scroll through their emails like they have better places to be. But I no longer care. Instead of feeling their lack, I feel gratitude, because thanks to them, I have Dottie, the mother I always had. And when I finally get a minute alone, even after all this time, there's only one person I want to spend it with. Henry takes me by the hand, pulling me close as we sway to the music. How does it feel to be 30 years old? He says, lips warm against my temple. 35, I whisper in correction. It feels as if I finally got something right, like it was all worth it. Henry smiles, his eyes sparkle under the fairy lights. I know exactly what you mean. He spins me around, then pulls me in for a kiss. In the glow of happiness, I think about where we'd both be now if this glitch had never happened. Then, like everything that happened before, I let it go. It doesn't matter. Today is the first new day, I say. The first we haven't already lived. I wonder what's next, he replies with a mischievous grin. I know he's referring to the little velvet ring box I found in his sock drawer that he thinks I haven't seen. In our bedroom. In our home. That we bought together. That no one is ever going to take from us. I smile. I can't wait to find out. The end.
You have been listening to The Glitch, an Audible original. Written by Leanne Slade. Performed by Daisy Edgar Jones and Sam Claflin. Directed by Olivia Landsberg. The production was engineered by Sid Glover at Audible Studios. Dialogue edit by 2020 Recordings. Audio proofing by Shakasonic Limited. For Audible, the production coordinator was Yuki Palmer. The executive producer was Nicola Wall. And the commissioning editor was Robin Morgan Bentley. Copyright 2024 by Leanne Slade. Production copyright 2024 by Audible Limited. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.